Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the one and only Cavs the Podcast, featuring commentary from all of your favorite Cavs the Blog bloggers. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Thank you, and welcome back to Cavs the Podcast, the Korean Takeover Edition. This is yours truly, Chris Francis, joined by my compatriot, Elijah Kim. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. Good to see the Cavs live, and good to see that they're in the second round now.
Man, you caught a lot of that first round there. How many games did you get? Like, which games did you go to?
I went to 5 and 7, so yeah, they're good. They're good games, obviously, winning at home court, protecting it, so.
Oh, nice. Were you,
Sorry, I also went to game 3, so 1 and 2. 2 and 1, I guess.
That's amazing. So when was the last time we podcast? It was only after game 3, right?
Yes. No, it was right before game 5.
So how was it? I mean, like, what's the takeaway? What's the reaction? What were the vibes like in the house?
Oh, I mean, it was a great atmosphere. You know, going to being able to go to both, you know, away and home was a really cool experience. Definitely yesterday.
Which was the better crowd?
I think the crowd was definitely better in Cleveland, but you have to also understand that you have to give it proper context. It is an elimination game and they came back from 18 down. So you would hope that the crowd is better in that scenario than on a game 3 road game, you know. But that being said, the arena was crazy loud. It was actually pretty interesting because George Niang and JB Bickerstaff got booed even before the game. So it was interesting to say the least.
I mean, honestly, they deserve it. I mean, so what were your takeaways about the game? Let's work our way back, I guess, from game 7. What were your takeaways from witnessing it live?
Yeah, I mean, the first half, for most of the first half, it was pretty depressing. My girlfriend and I, we drove up from Columbus in the morning and we're like, man, I can't believe we drove up for this. And the Cavs were down, I think, like 16, 18. And we're just like, oh, my gosh, we came up here. We spent, you know, a good amount of money, time, energy, effort. And we're like, wow, I can't believe this is really how the season's going to end. To be honest, my girlfriend is been like a soothsayer for the Cavs because she has predicted every game correctly. In fact, even game 6, I was very sure that the Cavs were going to close it out, and she made a bet with me that they wouldn't, but they would win game 7. So that's part of the reason why we made the trip up together. I had to pay my bet. You take her. So
good man, good man. Wait, I thought we were all on board with the 7-game series the last podcast, if I'm not mistaken. I thought that was both of our takes.
Yeah, but I got too optimistic right before tip off, I think. And let's be real, they should have won. I think we can agree they should have won that game after the third quarter.
I don't know. I mean, how many minutes did Sam Merrill play?
Zero.
Okay, I rest my case. But I mean, so what's your takeaway from the series? You know, how are you feeling? You know, how do you feel about how it went down? How do you feel? What lived up to your expectations? What defied your expectations? You know, that sort of thing.
I think Donovan Mitchell exceeded my expectations. So starting with the positive, he was better than I thought he would be, especially in game 6 and 7. I mean, you know, when you score 89 points in 2 games, I think it's pretty hard to argue that.
Yeah, it was a historic performance. I saw the graphic that said it was basically the last guy to do it was like AI in 2001. So it's a generation ago.
Yeah. So given that, that was, you know, exceeded expectation for sure. I think on the negative side, I think Darius Garland is probably the biggest negative. It just, I don't know. Body language policing is obviously hard to swallow, but he just looked like he was sulking and, you know, was really in his emotions during the game, even during game 7s. But, you know, at the end of the day, I thought he played pretty well to close out the game, and that's all you can expect. And they got the win there. He was the best plus-minus player in the fourth quarter of game 7, so he somewhat redeemed himself, and he actually played well in game 6 too. So I could give him his flowers there, but except the fourth quarter. So that being said, I thought it was, you know, my key takeaway is I think the Cavs reached their goal for the season, which was to win a series, and it's only going to be a lot harder from here now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, piggybacking off of you, I think what I took away from this series is this is finally Donovan Mitchell's team. Like, I feel like that's what really got established in this series is, like, there's no doubt who's carrying us, whose team it is, and, you know, we're only going as far as Donovan Mitchell takes us. You know, whereas I think, you know, there was a weird issue about pecking order, you know, I mean, especially with DG as the point guard, you know. But really, we saw DG play a lot more off ball, I thought, you know, especially in the series. And I think, you know, given the 6 and 7 performance and also the game 1 performance, I mean, I feel like just finally is Donovan Mitchell's team. What do you think about that?
I think that's a fair point. I also think maybe the Cavs need to, I don't know, roll their, maybe their young players aren't as great as they thought they were entering this year, which is unfortunate. But it might be the reality. So I think it's a good, great thing they have Donovan Mitchell, or they would have looked way sillier in this playoff run.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, to me, I think you're absolutely right about DG. You know, you'd have to say he's probably one of the biggest disappointments, only outdone by Georges Niang in net rating for the team for the series at -9.4. But, you know, he had his moments. You know what I mean? He had his moments, like you said, game 6, game 7. You know, there was glimpses of hope finally, you know, that he's really understanding how to seize the moment, you know. Is that what you saw, you know, at the games and everything?
Yeah, I think it's ironic because his, you know, three-pointer that he took, he missed the first one, but he made the second one. And what are we going to remember, like, next week? He made the second one, right? So,
of course,
that will be what we remember, and which is fair.
I mean, wouldn't that probably the highest moments of trust that you've seen between the teammate? You know, it's that looked like something that the mid-season Cavs would do with the ball movement with Allen and Mitchell during the middle of the season. That was finally the ball movement and the trust that we were looking for, was it not?
Oh, I agree. I thought we had glimpses of that 18-2 run when Sam Merrill was in that played in that second quarter. It was pretty much that lineup, right? It was
right.
Mitchell, you know, obviously it was Mobley instead of Allen, but you know, you had Merrill and LeVert, and LeVert played a great game. Got to give him his flowers in this one.
Absolutely.
I thought he single-handedly kept the Cavs in the game in the first half when everyone else was struggling, obviously except Donovan. Even Donovan was struggling from the field, but they were calling a lot of fouls in this game. I mean, man, if I'm even as a Cavs fan, it felt like the Cavs were getting a lot of easy, cheap ones, but then couldn't really be that excited about it because then the Magic would get a bunch of cheap ones just right back. So at one point, I think I tweeted out there are more fouls than field goals in the second quarter, and I'm not sure what it ended up being, but it was pretty close, I believe, because both teams were in the bonus with over 6 minutes to go in the second quarter.
Some of the earlier games in the series were awful, awfully officiated, I'd say. It was definitely felt like they were just basically trying to perpetuate the series with their calls. It was disgusting. Adam Silver from prison, 2024. I would say, you know, piggybacking off of what you were saying about Sam Merrill, I think one of the things they stumbled upon in this series was the magic of Isaac Okoro with Sam Merrill. I just did a little dive, and in 24 minutes for the series, they carried a net rating of plus 27 with 123 offensive rating and 96 defensive rating. All the other Isaac Okoro and Sam Merrill were both negatives outside of each other. Have any reaction to their stats?
I think their pairing makes a lot of sense actually, because Okoro plays one way of the 3-and-D and Merrill is much better at the other side of it. So if you could combine them two, that'd be great. But I also thought Okoro played pretty well, even though he didn't shoot the ball that great in Game 7 especially. But I thought his energy was good. His defense on Paolo was good. And I know some people laugh at that because Paolo still scored like 39 points, I think. But
well, that happened. That's what happens in the playoffs. The star players are going to get theirs no matter what. To me, it looked like he wore him down is what it looked like.
Yeah, and I think it made it Paolo really think about it put a lot of pressure on him to either score the mid-range or, you know, try to draw a foul. And at the end, when it did get tighter, there were a couple plays where he didn't get that call, and I think it very visibly frustrated him because, I mean, the dude shot, like, what, almost 20 free throws, so...
Yeah, he was getting every call. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, and, you know, it was funny because at the end, they were just like, the Magic just completely lost composure, threw the ball away. They're down like 12, but they're still trying to, like, guys were trying to cut to the basket for layups instead of taking threes when they needed threes. It was, you know, you needed to keep making threes. So I think there were two straight positions where Wendell Carter, like, threw it away to trying to find Franz. So I just thought that, all those players for the Cavs definitely had an impact in moments, and no one was – I mean, shoot, even Donovan was not very good in Game 3 or 4, but all those guys played decent here and there, and obviously like guys like Marcus Morris had his moment in Game 5. The only person who might have not had a good moment was George Niang, unfortunately, and he happened to play a lot. Garland, even as much as he struggled, he had his good moments. Mobley had his good moments, so it was just a real collective team effort, at least in spurts. But obviously, to be an elite team, they got to be more consistent across the board on stuff like that.
Yeah, interesting to get your takes on Mobley. I think that it was a renaissance performance of sorts in Game 7. It was nice to see him To me, it was, to me, what I saw in game seven is he simplified his game into, I'm just going to dominate on the defensive end. Screw the offense. I'll take whatever comes to me in the offense, but I'm just going to make sure that I'm going to focus all my energy on the defensive end. And it really obviously turned into a historic performance for him with, I think, a double-double, 16 rebounds, 4 or 5 blocks. What'd you make of Evan Mobley's game over the court, especially with Jared Allen out?
I mean, I think you have to give him props. He's, you know, I think Jared Allen acquitted himself of being soft by playing really well to start the playoffs. I think Mobley, in a way, acquitted himself a little bit in game 6 and 7. He played bigger. He got a lot of rebounds. He got a lot of steals and blocks. So, you know, he showed his defensive unicornness on that end of the floor. His offense, I'll be honest, was pretty ugly. I mean, there were a couple times he got matched up with guys like Cole Anthony, and he still couldn't score on a post-up. Like in the fourth quarter,
bad.
When they're
all he has to do is just shoot it. Just shoot the fadeaway.
Yeah, he tried to like
come on.
He tried to like back him down once, and he was already so close.
Yeah, just shoot over him.
But you know, I think one of the reasons why everyone looks at Mobley so negatively is because of the expectations that everyone has placed on him. And look, I think maybe I'm more realistic. I just always felt like his offense was kind of lacking, and I just don't see that, to be honest, ever being like an elite. I don't think Mobley will ever be an elite offensive player, but I do think he is making improvements on that end, whether it being his playmaking, kind of knowing when to cut and being like the ultimate best dunker spot trash man guy. I mean, I think that's an elite trait in itself too, to be honest, on a contending team. Being a guy who's super efficient without needing the ball that much. So I think there are ways for Mobley's game to continue to develop offensively without him being like a, you know, like a dribble, like a 7-foot dribbler of the basketball. But I think everyone's just kind of expecting that, and it just takes time because, remember, he's still only 22 years old. He's a very young player, and I think defensively he just keeps getting better and better, and that's kind of where his biggest impact is and will continue to be probably for his whole career.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That's well said. I think I still have, yeah, I think that's the main point I take away is he's definitely young. I think the offense is going to take a long time. We knew it was going to take a long time. And also, he's in a situation right now where he's not going to get touches, nor should he deserve touches, you know, as many as at least Garland and Mitchell, obviously, and even Allen at this point. So, I mean, he's a fourth option on a contending team. So, you know, I think whatever the expectations are on offense should be, you know, withheld until later in his career. I went back and looked at what's interesting is as I go back and look at the past 2 years with Twin Towers, it's a good news, bad news thing where the highest net rating is definitely with Twin Towers on the court. Unfortunately, they are a net negative at minus one with a 105 offensive rating. So, I mean, what's it going to take to, you know, what's it going to take to get the offense on track with those guys on the court?
I think it's honestly a challenge for whoever coaches the team next year, because I think the Cavs are ultimately about asset preservation and asset maximization, and I don't think they're going to trade any of the core four guys unless they get a player who's equivalent or better. And to the Cavs, those guys are viewed very highly to them. So I think one way it could work, and it's not a true apples to apples comparison, just because a lot of these other teams that play two bigs, at least one of them can shoot somewhat decently. I mean, like, if you're watching the Knicks-Pacers game right now, like, the Pacers are rolling out Miles Turner and Siakam together, right? But obviously Siakam can shoot the three a little bit. Turner can even shoot the three a little bit. And Obi Toppin obviously is playing like the three in their jumbo lineup. Like you look at the Timberwolves, who look great. Gobert obviously is like more traditional rim protecting center, but Kat and Naz Reid are both great shooters for their positions. So is there a way to make it work perfectly? I'm not sure, because unfortunately Allen and Mobley still can't shoot threes. And I think one of them has to kind of make it better for the long run. And to be honest with you, I know a lot of people want Mobley to develop that three-pointer, but I think there's an argument to be made from my point. I think Jared Allen could be that guy. I think he's a better natural free-throw shooter. And we've seen him start to take kind of that free-throw jumper in the mid-range if he's wide open. So I'm kind of wondering if that's the next evolution of Jared Allen's game, which could be interesting. I mean, that's how I view
it. How about both? Let's do both, baby.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great if both of them could shoot. But I think for me, I think we're looking at it the wrong way, where I think Allen might be a touch closer. And he's older. He's more mature. So he's, you know, seen it more.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk Celtics on the next side of this break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs, the podcast, Korean Takeover Edition. Chris Francis in the CTB Podcast Resort Studios with my fearless comrade, Elijah Kim. And we're talking the second round. Cavs have made it to the second round, thank God. And they are facing the prohibitive favorite in the Eastern Conference, and I guess I would assume for the championship itself, Boston Celtics. I think everybody, no one gives these Cavs a chance in this series, I would guess. And Boston, it seemed that Boston basically should be walking through easily to the finals. What's your initial hot take on this series, sir?
My hot take is that the Boston Celtics team may be the best team, but they're also not maximized because of their coach.
Interesting. So dueling banjos between JB Bickerstaff and Joe Mazzulla. Who do you like? Do you like Bickerstaff more?
Oh, hell no. But I don't think Mazzulla is a great coach. I think that's what I just don't think he's a great coach. So that's where I think if the Cavs had, you know, more health and talent, I would be more willing to admit publicly that they have a chance. But because of, you know, the lack of health and just the season of inconsistency, it's hard to really give them a chance, even for myself, who I think is pretty optimistic compared to a lot of people.
Is there any status update with Jared Allen and Dean Wade, which would be the two principals I think that matter most in this series?
Just from listening to other podcasts and reading the news, it does not sound like Jared Allen is particularly close, even though he keeps being listed questionable. I think the issue is he like has trouble lifting his arms above his head, which is not a good thing for a big man who is slightly undersized and has to always do that.
I think there's also have to bang and take shots there too, right?
Yeah, I think there's a risk of, you know, further injury because it's just bruised ribs and they could become, you know, cracked or broken ribs, you know, if he keeps taking shots like that. So that being said, I think also on Dean Wade, it's not like, you know, they ruled him out for the whole first series and it went the full seven games. I don't think it's like, oh, we were expecting it to be a 11-day injury and he's ready on, you know, day 12, because they play on day 13, you know. So I think the chances of Dean Wade playing in game one or two is probably pretty slim just from reading the tea leaves. But I think if both of those guys were healthy, I do think this easily would have been a much more competitive series, and the Cavs would have been much better throughout the whole course of the season as well, obviously.
Yeah, no. Boston's dealing with their own injury in Kristaps Porzingis. How much of an effect do you think that'll have? I think it's a sneaky underrated subtraction there.
Oh, I think it's a huge subtraction, because what kind of teams do the Cavs struggle with? They struggle with these teams that have big physical guys that can kind of outmatch, out-physical, and outplay, you know, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. And to be honest, it's not even guys that are that much talent, like more talented than those guys, just, you know, bigger physical guys. I'm not saying Porzingis is a big physical guy, but he's a better, you know, player than whoever they're rolling out there now, like Luke Kornet or,
let's not disrespect Luke Kornet, baby.
I know. I'm not saying he's bad. I'm just saying he's not Kristaps Porzingis.
Fair. Okay.
And I think Al Horford is a guy that always does well against Evan Mobley. So I definitely will not disrespect him, even though we have his father on our team.
That's right.
So
shout out to NBA champ Tristan Thompson.
Yeah. So, that being said, I think, where the Cavs might have the advantage is if Jared Allen plays in that two-man game. I don't see who else Boston could really roll out there to try to stop them. I mean, Tatum plays a lot of four. Horford will play a lot, obviously, and, you know, Porzingis played a lot at the five and four. So I think that definitely hurts their rotation in the spot where, theoretically, the Cavs should have an advantage.
Yeah, no, I think those are good points. I think I would assume Xavier Tillman is going to be in the rotation for the Celtics, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I think so. Did he play a lot so far this playoff?
That's a great question. I will tab over real quick. Not really. So that's an it. Okay, so he only played one game with 7 minutes. So basically, he did not play the series, which is interesting. He may get more opportunities, you know, obviously with Porzingis out. It sounds like, you know, just judging by this, I would assume then part of the plan for the Celtics is to play small. They might go super small with sprinklings of Al Horford, and then go super small with Jason Tatum possibly at the five. What do you think of that? What do you think the counter should be for the Cavs?
I think the counter for the Cavs, if Tatum's playing the five, is just have Mobley as the five and play the four out lineup. I think I'm looking at their stats now. It's interesting because Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard have played a lot, and that actually, I think, in a way, the Cavs have a slightly better chance against those guys.
I don't know. I would have given, what do you think of their bench? I mean, bench for bench, who do you give the edge to? I would give it to Boston all day. I mean, it's not even close, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think Boston has the better bench for sure. But I think in terms of just physicalness and size, the Cavs actually probably match up better with Boston than like the Knicks or Philadelphia, just given that, you know, their Hauser and Pritchard aren't really the biggest guys, and the Cavs guys are all pretty wiry themselves. So that's the only reason I would say that. I think definitely Boston all year round, their bench has definitely outperformed the Cavs. Although it will be interesting to see how they manage the Porzingis injury, because obviously there's only one game of data to back this up, but Horford kind of slid into that starting lineup, and he, you know, didn't really play. He only averages like 25 minutes so far in the playoffs, so it's not like he's playing a ton of minutes. But I think where the Cavs have to be careful is they don't have the wings to match up really that great with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and I'm just already premonitioning that Derek White, bald Derek White, is going to continue to be scorching hot in the playoffs because he has been on fire. He's playing like a man possessed right now.
Yeah, he looks great. It's I wonder even if I think that could be a source of potential friction. If he's rolling and Tatum wants to go Kobe mode, do they waste some possessions? Dealing with Tatum's ego.
I don't think so. I think Tatum has definitely played more mature. He's like not even the
top
two
scorer. You got a lot of background. No, it's all good.
Sorry.
Good.
Yeah, sorry. I just want to say I think Tatum has definitely matured because he's been more of a facilitator. I mean, he leads the team in assists in the playoffs by a lot.
Wow.
And, I think he's definitely playing more his role. He's like the third leading scorer for the team, which I was surprised by.
Really? So he's not the leading scorer?
He is not. It's Jaylen Brown and then Derek White. And then, they're all close. Don't get me wrong. They're all a shade over 20. But that was very surprising when I was looking that up. I think they just have a very balanced attack, and that's actually ironically where I think the Cavs might struggle a bit because they were, really focused on stopping Paolo and slowing down Franz, which simplified it a bit for them, I guess, against the Magic. But against the Celtics, it's just going to be tough because the Celtics take a ton of threes, and I'm just really interested to see how the Cavs are going to come out prepared to go against that look.
Yeah, who are you going to cheat off of? With the Celtics. You really can't cheat off of anybody except maybe Horford.
Even Horford, I just have nightmares of him draining threes on the Cavs.
Corners.
And you can't cheat off Hauser. You can't cheat off Pritchard. You kind of almost have to cheat off Holiday, maybe.
I think
you cheat off of Drew. And then you definitely can't cheat off of Derek White. Maybe you have to cheat off, if anyone, you cheat off of Jaylen Brown a little bit, maybe, but you can't cheat off anyone else, really.
No, I would not cheat off of Brown. In fact, I'd be more tempted to cheat off of Holiday, White, or anybody else, Pritchard, Hauser, just because they're more role players than Jaylen Brown, who's kind of a certified, all NBA, all-star type of guy who expects to make those shots.
Okay. Well, okay. I guess if this is a starting lineup, I'll name it to you. How would you match up? If Horford's at center, Tatum's at the four, Brown's at the three, and then White and Drew are the backcourt, how would you match up defensively against that?
Wow. I feel like you got to go Drew on – you got to go Spida on Drew. You got to go DG on White, which is that sounds already bad already right there. And then Strus on Jaylen – well, yeah, Strus on Jaylen Brown. Strus on Brown and then Okoro on that's the interesting thing too is that, who can you deploy Okoro to keep him on the court? He gives up 5 inches to Tatum. That's typically where Okoro struggles the most is against longer guys, obviously. Do you deploy Okoro on Tatum or do you cross match, take Derek White out,
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I would put Okoro on Tatum and obviously Mobley would guard Horford, but I actually think Okoro guards, he guarded Paolo okay. I actually thought Strus guarded Franz better than Okoro guarded Paolo, and obviously Paolo's better than Franz, but I would not be scared to try Strus on Tatum well, just to try it. And
present a little more size.
Yeah, and then I think Okoro and Jaylen Brown, I think they're kind of built more similarly, so that might be a better like physical matchup to have those guys you know, battle it out.
Yeah, the only reason why I think Strus might survive on Brown is Brown's not exactly got the greatest handles, so hopefully it's easier to defend that way.
Yeah, isn't his nickname like Only Goes Right?
Yeah, yeah, oh, like yeah. That? Yeah, although I guess he was working on the left, and I guess he's made improvements, but there's no way you're not selling out on the right hand.
Yeah, and that, I think one of the other areas where, you know, the Cavs, I'm a little worried about the Cavs is the Celtics. I mean, Tatum rebounds really well, given, you know, he's kind of a, more of a 3 and 4, but the Celtics guards, I think Drew and Jaylen Brown and Derek White, they're all pretty good collective rebounders. I think, yeah, Drew's averaging 5 a game right now in the playoffs, and just Jaylen Brown's averaging 7 a game. So, I mean, I think this is another, you know, group team effort to rebound. And I know it sounds like a broken record, but I feel like Spida and DG, even though they're small, they have a tendency to not really box out because that's just not, you know, they've never really done that their whole career, right? So, but they're going to have to in this
series. I'd say Mitchell has done a great job rebounding this season, especially for his size. Also, but that would require JB to bench DG and level up. I mean, like, from what I see, you know, Mitchell's a good rebounder when he's the point guard, you know, not necessarily when he's the two guard.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because I think one of Caris LeVert's career games was against the Celtics. So I'm wondering if you lean on that. And yeah, I'm actually really interested to see how Caris plays because I do think he will, with a series resetting, I think he kind of gets that longer leash again to start out. And
as he should, I think.
And he should. I mean, he played well at, you know, the last game too, so he should.
And they just kind of need his length at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, they just need like a bigger two if they, you know, at times they're going to need that longer two and three.
Yep, yep. So who? What's the over-under on Sam Merrill minutes this series?
Oof. You know, that's interesting because I think he should play every second that Sam Hauser's on the court too.
100%. Not even a question.
And Sam Hauser's getting 17 minutes a game so far, so hopefully more than what we've seen Merrill play this year, this postseason so far.
Who plays more, Georges Niang or Sam Merrill in this series?
We both know the answer to that. And it's the wrong choice. It's the wrong choice.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast, Korean Takeover Edition. Yours truly, Chris Francis, here with my fearless partner, Elijah Kim. And we are previewing the second round, Eastern Conference Semis Finals against the Boston Celtics. So I think it's prediction time. What do you think? How do you think this plays out? What do you think's going down?
Man, I think...
Are you going to any games?
You know, I am going to try to go to game 3 in Cleveland.
That's going to be amazing.
Only thing stopping me is it's so late. It's at 8:30 tip.
Ooh.
And it's going to be expensive because there's a lot of Celtics fans across the world. So it'll be interesting, but that's a tentative plan. I'm going to go with a slightly more optimistic take than I think I've seen most people go with. So I'm going to go with 6 games for the Boston Celtics. That's my pick, my prediction. I do think the Cavs will be competitive. I don't think they're going to get blown out like they did in Orlando those 2 games back-to-back. I think it'll be more tight and more competitive than that. I hope so. I hope there's no-shows given, you know, kind of the way they've come so far in this postseason. And I do think since they are starting on the road, which this group of Cavs players have not, they're going to be playing with house money in game 1 and 2. Like, they're expected to lose both those games. So my hope is that
they know that and they just let it fly. Just shoot, you know, I want to see the Cavs shoot 40 plus threes in this series. And they, I don't think they have at all this,
they're absolutely going to have to against the Celtics. Like the Celtics are taking 40 threes no matter what.
Exactly. So I think the Cavs, they have to counter by doing that, and hopefully you have a positive shooting variance over your opponent, right? So I'm going to pick the Celtics in six, but I do think it's a more competitive series.
Sorry,
you're going to say Celtics in five, aren't you?
No. You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say Cavs in six.
Wow.
I smell an upset. See, here's the thing. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm cooking in my brain, my fried brain, is that this series is the exact opposite of what we just had, where there were expectations for the Cavs. You know, they were supposed to win the series against Orlando. They were the higher seed. They were the more experienced team. All the pressure was on them. And thankfully, they rose to the occasion, you know, after a lot of hemming and hawing throughout the series. But now the pressure's off. No one expects them to win, you know, like to me, like this is the you talk about like playing free and loose. That's what I think I'm expecting from this situation is I think the Cavs are finally going to be in a position where they could say, hey, we got nothing to lose. Let's just let it fly. You know what I mean? And so I'm going with the shock to the world. And I think Kristaps Porzingis is probably the second most important player to the Boston Celtics, and he's out. Now, granted, we're missing probably the second most important player in Jared Allen, but I think there's a competition between those two as to who we'll see. I think it's definitely going to be Jared Allen before we see Kristaps, right?
Oh, yeah. I think I agree with you there.
Yeah. So... And so I'm going with the nobody believes in us angle, Cavs and six, you know, and this is also I'm presupposing that JB's got his head out of his ass and he's actually going to play Sam Merrill. But that's probably a bigger leap than Cavs and six.
I can't believe you think JB will play Sam Merrill.
I know. That was wishful thinking. That's what I said. It's more wishful thinking than Cavs and six. So there you go. How do you think game one plays out? Well, you know, they're coming off a big high win, game seven. You know, I'm expecting kind of a perhaps they lay an egg, just an emotional, you know, toll and schedule loss. What do you think?
I actually do think the Cavs will get one on the road. I don't know if it's game one.
Which one do you think? Yeah, which one do you think?
I lean towards game one because of rust.
That's true.
I think the Celtics have been sitting for a while, and they, you know, candidly haven't fully been able to practice. You know, they've had one game without Porzingis, but I think coming into the series, maybe they like overestimate their ability just to keep rolling with the way they have been. So my guess is game one. I think they'd probably get thoroughly beat in game two. But I do think they also split at home. That's kind of my prediction.
Well, that would be huge, wouldn't it? I mean, that'd be one of the biggest wins. I mean, that'd be the biggest win of this crew, right? A road win in the second round here, where they haven't won a road game yet, have they, in this iteration?
They have not won a road game in this iteration of the Cavs.
Interesting. So so let's take a look around the league. We got Pacers, Knicks, we got Nuggets, Wolves, we got who's on the other side of the bracket? OKC and
Mavericks.
So how you feeling? How'd you feel about game one? Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert.
You mean Michael Jordan?
That's right.
No, I'm kidding. I was surprised but when I look back and I take a more analytical look, I'm not as surprised because the Nuggets have trailed, I think, by 9 or more points in every postseason game so far this year. And I think they finally just got caught. Like, they dug a little deep of a hole. And to be honest, they, like, came back multiple times. They could have won that game. But the Wolves just made a couple more plays.
Who do you like in the series?
I do still like the Nuggets. I think Gobert is not playing tonight for personal reasons. I'm not sure what the reason is, but...
He just had his child.
Okay, got it. That's not a bad reason to miss a game. But I do think the Nuggets win tonight, and I think they, you know, steal one away and then they close it out. But I think the Wolves are kind of... They're definitely overachieving from expectations, but they're also possibly creating a blueprint for the Cavs on how to play with, you know, three of your top six being bigger guys. And maybe this is my hot take, but if Dean Wade was healthy, I think he could be a top six guy for the Cavs. Obviously, right now, he is not even available, and one of the best abilities is availability, and that's one where he clearly struggles at. But if the Cavs can go into, you know, roster construction planning, I'm kind of thinking and hoping that they can lean on the Timberwolves model and not really give up on this core, because I think that'd be a shame to do so.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, the Wolves have kind of taken a page out of the Cavs playbook and it's succeeding. And also, ironically, I think they have the exact blueprint you need to beat Denver, which is make Jokic work against three bigs, you know, and wear him out. Right. You know, so I think, you know, that's, you know, I think that's the blueprint for beating Denver. And you know, I think that that game one performance was so convincing to me that, you know, I would not be shocked. I want to say Wolves might take it. I really want to say it. But I mean, wow. I really do. I think Anthony Edwards is having his Trae Young run, you know, just coming out on the scene and just riding the high, you know. And it's hard to bet against him, you know? And also, I think he's impervious to the pressure, you know, especially because they're the underdogs. No, I'm guessing most people took the Nuggets, correct?
Oh, yeah, a lot of people took the Nuggets.
Yeah, yeah. So I like that nobody believes in us angle there. What about OKC Mavericks? Who you got?
Everyone, I think, is picking the Mavericks, and that includes me. So I just think the Mavericks have a lot of balance, and credit to them. They were aggressive in the deadline. They got PJ Washington. They got Daniel Gafford. They also have Derek Lively still. They have Derek Jones Jr., who's had a great year as a defender, and, you know, offensively he's a low usage guy, a guy that the Cavs should have gotten, which Nate Smith reminds us every time we pod.
Shout out to Nate.
And then, I just think that that team has a lot of good balance. Obviously, I think the one thing that makes me a little scared is Luka's kind of hurt and his knee is not going to be 100%. He keeps saying that. But I think
Kleber's out too.
And Kleber's out for the series. But I do think the Mavs still have enough. I just think, you know, it's the perfect system for a guy like PJ Washington. It's a great, you know, and then they have just a lot of depth. They got Josh Green. Obviously, they got Kyrie. And, you know, they just have good rounding of offense and defense and also depth to make a good run. So, and I just think this is a stage where OKC's inexperience may shine through, you know, when Luka and Kyrie are cooking and they go on a big run, like that's when young teams, I think, can struggle. And I think even in the Cavs Magic series, we kind of saw that in game seven. We saw the Magic not be able to find another gear when their backs got pushed and they gave up that 18-point lead. So
right.
That's kind of where I see that series going.
Yeah, no, although I would say, even though I'm loath to say it because I can't stand his fans and also I can't stand his rat ways, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander does have previous playoff experience with the Clippers. So this is his second go around. So, you know, they, you know, if he can rise to the occasion, they have somebody they can go to, you know. But I agree with you. Like, to me, it seems like it's OKC's inexperience that's the biggest issue in the series, right?
Yeah, I just think they're like a year away from making real noise.
Let's hop over to the other side of the bracket on the Eastern Conference. Who you got? What's going on? I had to move room, so I lost the TV. What's going on with the Knicks?
Sorry, you cut out for a sec. What did you say?
What's going on with Knicks Pacers?
It's tied up with 2 minutes to go.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Who you got coming down the stretch here?
Oh, man. I don't know. I'm nervous.
I'm going to take the Knicks. Yeah.
I think the Knicks close it out.
Yeah. They're at home, right?
And they got Brunson. They're at home. They're up. Yeah. And, you know, they're up five in the quarter, so they have good momentum in this game.
Oh, okay. So there you go. All right. I didn't know that they had – I didn't know they were winning the quarter. So who do you got for the series? Who would you rather face?
I got the Knicks. I would much rather face the Pacers, but I think the Knicks are going to – I think they'll win in either five or six. That's kind of my thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't respect the Pacers in this situation. I'm sorry. I don't. You know, they scream fraud to me. So I'm taking Knicks easily. But, I mean, this is the exact situation where the Knicks would disappoint, though.
I think it'd be disappointing if the Cavs somehow snuck out, and that's where they disappointed the Eastern Conference Finals.
There you go. There you go.
But all kidding aside, I do like the. I think the Knicks. It's interesting because they are a very physical team, but they found just a unique way to play with, you know, those two big guys. You know, they play Hartenstein a lot. They play Mitchell Robinson, who's, you know, still rounding into form. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Ooh, and the Pacers actually just challenged the foul, and Jalen Brunson, instead of getting a foul call, it's a turnover. So the Pacers have the ball with 1:51 to go.
Wow. It's interesting, just looking at the box score real quick. Pacers bench coming up huge. TJ McConnell and Ben, or somebody, Shepard. I don't know who the heck that is. I know he's a shooter, though. Brunson, you know, another, you know, stellar game. Really, it's the disappearing act is the Knicks bench, all in the negatives, and no one showing up at all. It's all been the starters. So, interesting contrast there. So I don't know. Are the Knicks going to pull it out? I don't know. Their defense is getting shredded, though. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, I was surprised that the Pacers were able to score at will, pretty much.
Really? Interesting. Interesting. I bet Knicks fans are ruining the day Julius Randle got injured, huh?
Maybe.
All right. Well, after this break, we will wrap it up, give you some pitches, and some NBA gossip. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. Yours truly, Chris Francis, in the booth with Elijah Kim, Korea Takeover, part infinity, I guess. So we got some slop season upon us. So the sprinkle, a preview of slop season. We got Pat Riley flaming his whole roster today at the press conference, telling Jimbo to shut up, and telling Hero that he's he's fragile. Hot take on Pat Riley's undressing of his roster.
He's Pat Riley's going to get canceled soon. That's my opinion. If he keeps talking like this, it's not looking good.
Ooh, so what's your feelings about his? I mean, what are your feelings regarding what he's saying? Is Jimmy out there? Is Jimmy gone? Is Hero gone? What's going on with them? What do you think the plan is for them?
I think the plan is that it's going to be interesting because I think Pat made it very clear that they're not going to approach Jimmy Butler and just give him like a new max extension. But the sense is that Jimmy wants a new max extension probably because of his injury history and just kind of the wear on his body. And let's not forget, he's an older guy. He came into the league, you know, as a multi-year college player. It's not like he came in one and done. So I do think some of Pat Riley's criticisms are valid. Like, you know, you can't just expect to show up when the playoffs happen and then, look, you even get hurt in the playoffs because you're not playing all year, you know. So it'll be interesting. I do kind of also wonder, though, if he's, you know, he's past his time now as a executive in the association because, I mean, let's face it, he's an older guy and he's calling the shots now. He still does things kind of the old school way, and it'll be interesting to see kind of what shakes out. Because I think Daryl Morey is definitely licking his chops, waiting to send Pat Riley a terrible trade offer for Jimmy Butler. Because I do think 100%. there is some validity that Jimmy and Embiid could play together. The question was always maybe Embiid would go to Miami, but I don't know. After today, maybe it's the other way around.
That would be funny. Correct the Tobias Harris misstep. Am I right?
But Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons. Yeah, there was two of them they screwed up on. Jeez. They don't deserve happiness. I don't care. Screw them. Who do you think the Sixers take? Do they take Jimmy Butler or do they take Paul George? Which one should they want?
Ooh, that's a good point. I think you have to take whoever costs you less assets, which would probably be PG because he could just come as a free agent. But ultimately, I do think the Clippers end up stop playing strong ball and then they, you know, are able to get their.
Yeah, sorry about that, listeners. Let me backtrack. LA Clip, Sham Sarania. Reporting that the LA Clippers have offered Paul George multiple contracts less than the max that he's refused. He's expecting a max and is expected to test free agency this summer. Go ahead with your reaction there.
Yeah, and so that's why I think the 76ers are willing to give him a max.
You think the Clippers will bow down eventually?
I do think so. I think the closer they get to it, I think Kawhi will be like, hey, look, man, like they're going to give you the max. Just take it. That's kind of my sense.
Do you think there's any sense of animosity between P&G and Kawhi and just between the two of them and maybe wanting to part ways that way?
Oh, I definitely think there could be some frustration and anger because PG has been healthy in the playoffs every year. You know, he played well this year. He kind of redeemed himself this year a little bit. And I think even James Harden played well this playoff. But when they're counting on a guy like Kawhi and he can't play in the playoffs, you know that they're pissed off at him. I mean, they have to be upset because, you know, he still gets load management this whole season and still doesn't play, you know. So.
Well, and also kind of Kawhi escapes the criticism, really, because when he plays, he's awesome. So there's like – oh, if Kawhi's healthy, we're good, you know, but he's not, you know, he's not healthy. So there's no, like, you know, PG and Harden are taking the fall for actually being on the court and flaming out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Do you think it's in their minds, like, do you think in the Clippers' minds it's a choice between Harden and PG? That's where they're playing hardball with PG?
I think the choice is, hey, look, Harden already accepted a lower than max offer before, but PG has never done that. But to keep all three, we're going to have to do that, and I think the rationale is, you know, I think Steve Ballmer's like, I'm willing to burn money if we're going to be contending, but I'm not going to keep burning this money if we're not going to even make it out the first round.
Right.
I think that's kind of the hardball stance here.
Yeah, I think that's fair, too. I mean, really, you got it. This is results-based business. So, Lonzo Ball. Erstwhile basketball player Lonzo Ball. He opted in on is into his contract. That's the final year of his deal, right?
I believe so. And he gets $21 million to play or rehab his knee this year.
Yeah. Do you think he's not going to play again? Do you think he's playing again? You know, he's only 25 years old.
I know. He's so crazy. Oh, he's 26 now. Sorry.
Oh, 26. Sorry.
Yeah. But still, same it's diff. It's pretty crazy that they're, you know, they're cutting, you know, they're burning $21 million for a player who hasn't played in 2+ years now.
Unreal. Unreal. And it really torpedoed their whole system. Like, he was key to he was the glue guy that made it all work. And they had like 50 games of enjoyment of that and never to be seen again. It's crazy. I feel bad for the shout out to my Bulls friends, Bulls fans, friends, Kev Dog and, Thomas out there. They've been struggling. Many others too, in the struggle. So, well, any other last thoughts before we do some pitches? Any other news that we need to cover?
I don't think so.
Do we got an update on the game?
Yeah, so it was kind of crazy. So Brunson got fouled. But they overturned it. Then it became a turnover. Then the Pacers had the ball, and then Miles Turner had an offensive foul with 12 seconds to go. And then the Pacers tried a challenge, and then they lost their challenge. So the Knicks ended up winning the challenge, and then they're shooting free throws right now. But there's less than 10 seconds left, and they still have a chance because it's only 119-117 with one free throw to go with 11 seconds left. But the Pacers don't have a timeout, so they're going to have to go down the length of the floor in 10.7 seconds.
Dang. Dang. So, anything to pitch? Any good stories? Any good stories? Any witnessing of interesting things up in the the shores of Lake Erie?
Not. You know, I do think the one thing I like to pitch is resilience, because even though the Cavs did not win prettily, they were not anywhere near close to what they should have done. They proved time and time again that they are a resilient bunch, and they were able to win and be resilient. And that's a word my girlfriend uses about them. So that's my pitch, is that I'll use that word to describe the team.
That's beautiful. I love it. I love it. I'll go in the same vein then. Donovan Mitchell, he's the new king of Cleveland. This is it. This is going to be the reign of Donovan Mitchell. There's all this bullshit talk out there. Oh, he's leaving this, that, the other thing. You know, I think he's planting his flag. I think this is going to be the year he plants his flag. He's going to show everybody who he is. One final question to you regarding Cavs-Celtics. Who you taking? Who would you rather have, Tatum or Mitchell? Last shot.
Man. Last shot? I think I would take Mitchell.
That's what I'm talking about. Mitchell. That's what I'm talking about. Who would you take? Who do you got as a better player? You would take Tatum over the course?
I think I'd have to, just because he's proven it.
In a vacuum, though. In a vacuum, not considering context. Not considering context.
I think.
In a vacuum, who you got as a better player?
Man. I think Mitchell's better. But I just think it's just so hard to go against big wings right now in the NBA.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
You gave me the answer I was looking for. We taking Mitchell, baby. We're riding Mitchell. Ride or die with Mitchell. Here we go. It's a new king of Cleveland. That's what we're going to see. Shock the world. Go.
Let's hope so, man.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to do. Shock the world. Go Cavs.
As always, go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blog podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers. There's a fire.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.